Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Maris Liss. I represent the petitioners, and I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Thank you. I'm going to tell you in very brief like what my 3 points that I plan to argue, and then I'm going to go into each point. I'm going to talk about the fact that it was a prejudicial legal error for the board not to review, to make a decision about their not having jurisdiction about the economic deprivation issue that warrants remand. I'm going to talk about the fact that the board has to consider the cumulative effects of all the harms to decide if the cumulative effect rises to the level of persecution, including the economic persecution. And third, I'm going to talk about the failure of the immigration judge to actually take administrative notice of the country report and to fail to consider the documentary evidence about country conditions. Okay, so going to my first issue, which is the exhaustion issue, my favorite standard of review is de novo, of course, because it's least deferential. And something that this court has jurisdiction over is whether the board made a decision about its own jurisdiction. And that's a legal question, and therefore there's de novo review on that. And the case that stands for that is Hernandez versus Holder, 738 F3rd 1099, about the de novo standard for review about the board's determination of its own jurisdiction. Now, in my 28J letter, I made a list of places where Alvarez exhausted the issue of economic deprivation in writing in their pretrial brief, in the particular social group statement where it was mentioned 6 times on one page, and the petitioner even cited case law, Babala and Hay, and then of course the immigration judge also made findings about economic harm. I don't agree with those findings, but they were made. And then the board knows that the petitioners were raising economic deprivation because they actually made a point of saying, we're not going to reach that thing that you want us to raise because we think that we don't have jurisdiction over that.
Well, so counsel, you have an argument, and you are now outlining an argument of why the board was wrong to say that this wasn't exhausted or hadn't been raised before the IJ. But where did you present this argument in your opening brief?
So, Your Honor, I'm not sure if you're aware, but I came into this, I'm not affiliated with the Holly Law Firm, and I just came into this solely for the argument. So I'm kind of stuck with everything that was in the record and all the briefing that came before. But I will say that in petitioning, and honestly, I would not have, briefed the case the same way. I tried to submit a reply, of course, because, I really want to help these people, and there was a true legal issue. But I know that circuit courts always can visit the question of jurisdiction, and in the petitioner's brief, they did talk about the economic deprivation, and I think that was enough to preserve it. And then, of course, the respondent...
Can you just, for purpose of answering, the answer is it wasn't in the brief. We could waive such a defect if it was truly in the interest of justice, I suppose. But the answer is he lost the job he had. But where does that get to the level that they truly will be deprived? He can't get some other job. It's not impossible. None of that was developed, was it?
Well, I think that it was developed that he had to quit his job and leave, that he didn't feel that he could get another job and he would be safe. He still had the knowledge of the streets and the alleys and the local towns, and so even if he took a job as a shoemaker, that doesn't mean that the Knights Templar would not want him to be their driver. And I just want to say that, you know, about coming into this case late, you know, I'm on a listserv with attorneys, and so, you know, Mr. Holly was like wanted to find out how to, you know, tell a court not to do oral argument. And I said, no, if the court wants oral argument, it means that there's something really important going on they would have questions about. I'll be your coach. I will moot you. And, you know, everybody has their first argument, but he has Parkinson's. And so that was why he didn't want to do the argument. And so I said, well, I'll step in and I'll do it. You know, and that happened in a case in January, Archila. And so then he called me, he reached out to me for this case to say, I have another case where, you know, this time I actually did a motion not to have oral argument. It hasn't been ruled on. I think I better, like, you know, retain you in case there's going to be argument. And so, but, you know, I as part of preparing for oral argument, I had to know every page of the record.
Before you're out of time, let me ask you a question. Okay,
yeah.
You're upset that nobody discussed the country conditions report, but doesn't the country conditions report indicate that the Knight Templars have greatly lost their power, that they've diminished, that their leaders have been arrested? I'm not sure how the country conditions report as a whole benefits you.
Well, just because it does benefit me, because the Knight Templar is still a player. And they still need drivers. And they're only going to get bigger if they have more drivers and more workers serving them. So I don't really think that it protects him that Knight, you know, if Knight's Templar is 10% smaller or 20% smaller or 50% smaller, he's still in danger. They already know him. And they know what his special skill set is. And, you know, the judge particularly said, I'm going to take administrative notice of it, and I'm going to keep this piece of paper that's the cover sheet in the record. And that's going to be, so when I say in my, you know, decision, you know, that I'm taking administrative notice of a certain document, this will cue the BIA to look at that document so that they can take administrative notice of it. So that's why he kept one, because when I was reading the record, I was like, why is there only one page? I was thinking, oh, do I have to make a motion to Mr. Alexander that the whole country report is written is missing and only the front page is there? And then I saw the whole context where, you know, he had an attorney who did not submit the evidence correctly because they didn't paginate it. He didn't follow the rules of the court. And so the judge says, I'm not going to take the country report at all. And then he said, well, can you at least take administrative notice of it? And he's like, well, yeah, I can, but, you know, you can actually submit it at the next hearing. And then at the next hearing, the judge reminded him, oh, do you have that paginated country report like I told you to bring next time? And the attorney, you know, said, oh, no, I didn't do that. But you'll take administrative notice. Yes, I will. But then he didn't. And, you know, I feel bad for this family because, you know, there was a lot of things that happened that I wouldn't have done if I had the case. And I feel a little awkward, you know, in the position of being here like this. But, you know, even if the economic deprivation doesn't rise to the level of persecution, what the finder of fact will have to do is, in the totality of circumstances, do like a math equation, like being threatened that the wife and child will be taken away. That's how they said it, but it means, like, I guess kidnapped or murdered. It was definitely a dire threat. You know, a caravan of armed men coming to the personal home where his family was there. So there's all different elements about the level of the threat. And then you add to that the economic deprivation that he had to give up his job and leave. And so, you know, when in pages 14 to 16 of Mr. Alexander's brief, which I asked you to ignore, it's like a string cite of cases about economic persecution. But he never talked about the cumulative effect of everything that happened. The economic. Thank you so much.
All right. We'll hear from the government now.
May I please the court, Gerald Alexander for Department of Justice. So the issue in this case is quite simple, and that's whether the credible testimony presented by the petitioner makes out a case for harm rising to the level of persecution. And the simple answer to that is that it just doesn't. There were some regrettable actions. You know, obviously, what happened to petitioner and her family is not a good thing, but it just does not rise to the level of persecution. And so, you know, the threats, it's important to remember that the threats that were not made to the petitioner. They were made to her husband, who is not a party to this case. So maybe it would be different if the husband were a petitioner here, but he's not. And so that it just does not meet that level.
Can you address the you know, the question of economic harm? I mean, because we the board said this wasn't raised before the immigration judge, but as you you've seen and as you just heard your friend explaining, I mean, it wasn't presented very thoroughly, but it was mentioned there. So what should we do with that statement from the board?
Well, first of all, it's arguable. The only relevant place to look for whether the argument was raised is in the brief filed by petitioner to the immigration judge. That's what the board was looking at. And in that brief, there's a very short mention of the legal standard of economic harm. It doesn't explain why there was economic harm here. It does nothing to specify how that broad legal doctrine affects this case. And so it's arguable whether that preserved the issue for appeal. But if it did, again, the merits of it are simply that they haven't made out a case of economic harm. I mean, what the testimony shows that petitioner's husband was able to continue working as a cab driver until members of the gang came to his home, threatened him in a way that he found to be credible, and then they left the country almost immediately thereafter. So this gentleman was working as a taxi driver. He testified that they were threatening him for 4 years and asking him to work for the gang, but they never did anything. And he did not testify that he couldn't work as a taxi driver. He testified that, yeah, well, sometimes while I was driving, they would flag me down and say, hey, you should be working for us. And if you don't, we're going to do something to you. But they didn't do anything to him. They didn't do anything to his family. And he continued to work.
Well, maybe that's right on the merits, but do you think we can consider that when the board didn't make any decision?
Well, no. I think that there's two different questions here. One is, did they preserve the argument on appeal? And we say no. The board was correct in saying, yeah, you know, that brief mention doesn't preserve the argument on appeal. So that's point one. Point two is, If you determine that the board was wrong about that, then it's harmless error, because on the merits of the thing, it's clear that there is not a prima facie claim of economic harm. And so the remedy that petitioners are seeking is remand. Well, remand would be futile because they can't make out the claim. All a remand would do would be for the board to look at the evidence that's already in the record on that point, and that evidence doesn't amount to anything. So if the board was wrong, it's harmless error. Unless the court has any other questions, we submit the case on our brief.
All right. Thank you, counsel. And Ms. Liss, you have just about a minute.
Oh, may I start?
Yeah, please.
Okay. First of all, it happens that the case that I argued in November, Archila, was a person who the persecutor bar was imposed on them, and all he did was talk to people. It actually, even though he never touched anybody, he never physically abused anybody, he never threatened anybody, all he did was talk to people, and he collected names. Now, he gave over those names to other people, and other people, you know, made those people disappear, okay? But, the fact that Mr. Alexander is saying that nothing happened, well, an armed caravan of people coming to your personal home, your personal space, when your wife and child is there, is definitely constitutes you know, harm, and I believe it rises to the level of persecution the same way, you know, when my other client was just talking to people and the persecutor bar was imposed on him and he never did anything to anybody. But also about the one other very short thing about the indirect threat. Indirect was, it was told to Moises, but Tanya was there and hearing it. She eavesdropped it. And also the child ran outside and the mother had to come and get the baby in. And so, you know, when they say it was vague and indirect, they don't mean that it was like an indirect threat, like, you know, like something about a third cousin or two people, you know, somebody twice removed. I mean, it was in the presence of the wife and child at their personal home. And that's what indirect means. Indirect does not minimize it.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. We thank both counsel for their helpful arguments. And the case just argued is submitted.
Thank you.
We'll hear our argument next this morning in Social Technologies LLC against Apple Inc.
Judge Miller, I need to take 2 minutes to get a roofer off my roof.
Okay. We'll take a 2-minute break for that.
This court stands in recess for 2 minutes.